morning, Mike.
You know.
And this is completely safe?
Yes, we do these ride-alongs all the time.
Ready to go?
Yeah, I guess.
Will you shut that thing off? Everywhere I go, they've got a camera in my face. This is the time to retire, because everyone's got a camera and everyone's got a lawyer. I'm retiring at the right time. I was cop at the right time. You're gonna have a lot of crap to deal with moving forward.
Five minutes. We're in, we're out, and we're rich.
On the ground now! On the ground!
Abrams Street.
One suspect with an automatic weapon outside National Bank. Shots fired!
We're not here to play any games.
My ride along. We gotta find him.
I'm hit, Mike.
Just hang on, Mac.
Let's give us something else to worry about.
Get him out of there now!
And only get to this active shooter as quick as possible.
No, you were an hour late, and we were outgunned. What took you so long?
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic.
Oh no, why'd you laugh?
We can just keep going. We can roll with that.
Mike Tricio.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Yeah, we just gotta keep going. For some reason, we got like, I think it's because we're recording this podcast at a different time than we usually do.
Yes.
Like, we're all out of whack today. Like, we got a case of the giggles early on, and I couldn't get through the intro. We tried it like six times. Finally made it through with just a laugh at the end, so I think that's the one we gotta use, right, Mike?
That's fair. I accept. Nothing but the best for our listeners.
Exactly. You know what? We only got like five movies left. Fuck it, you know?
Yeah. There's no rules anymore.
It's anarchy. It's total chaos. You know, Mike, I figured when we reached 2018, it would be all smooth sailing, like from here on out, in terms of Nicolas Cage movies. You know, we've long discussed the Nicolas Cage renaissance, and we were looking forward to movies like Mom and Dad and Mandy and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I think what we didn't count on was that he made eight movies in 2018. And about half of them were some of the worst VOD crap that Nicolas Cage has done yet. It's truly amazing to see Cage be in movies like Mandy or Spider-Verse, and then in the same year be in movies like The Humanity Bureau or the movie we're discussing today, 2-11, which I think we finally confirmed 2-11 is the title of the movie and not 2-1-1.
Yes.
Because at one point in the movie, they say, like, oh, we have a possible 211 in progress. They never explain what a 211 is, but they do say 211, so that's the one we're going with. Also, I looked it up. Apparently, this movie takes place in Massachusetts. 211 is a crime code in California, and not in Massachusetts. But the reason it is a crime code in California, and that's why the title of the movie is 211, 211 is a crime film largely inspired by the 1997 North Hollywood shootout, largely considered one of the most intense shootouts in U.S. police history. And when I say inspired by, I mean it really is the bulk of the movie. Over its 86-minute runtime, there's probably about 20 minutes of setup, and then the rest of the movie is dedicated to a shootout between cops and bank robbers. And the reason we're talking about this movie today is that one of those cops is played by Nicolas Cage. Now, the film isn't an exact retelling of the North Hollywood shootout. It kind of takes the basic idea of it and creates its own story with the original characters, a subplot involving the war in Afghanistan, and it changes the setting from Hollywood to the fictional city of Chesterford, Massachusetts. So at what point does this stop being inspired by the North Hollywood shootout is my question exactly. Like, yeah, we're going to make a North Hollywood shootout movie, but we're going to change everything about it. Nicolas Cage plays Mike Chandler, a police officer who is just 3 days away from retirement, probably. He might as well be. That's kind of how it's set up in the movie. He recently lost his wife to cancer, which puts a strain on his relationship with his daughter Lisa, played by Sophie Skelton from the TV series Outlander. Her husband Steve McAvoy is also Cage's partner on the force, in a weird coincidence. And he's played by Dwayne Cameron, who was once one of the Power Rangers on Power Rangers Operation Overdrive. So there is that. And they're assigned a ride-along at the beginning of the film, a high school student named Kenny, who's played by Michael Rainey Jr. from the Starz series Power. Kenny's mother, Shawnee, is played by R&B singer Shari Watson, better known as Truth Hurts. From there, Ori Pfeffer from films like Munich, Hacksaw Ridge, and Angel Has Fallen plays Trey, one of the robbers. Corey Hardrick, one of Bradley Cooper's buddies in American Sniper, plays Officer Hansen. And one of the bank robbers, Luke, is played by none other than Nicolas Cage's son, Weston Cage, who also appeared in Lord of War and Rage. And, you know, despite starring in Rage, he is still just Weston Cage. Weston Cage.
Oh, what a twist.
Boom, nailed it.
Crushed it.
He also contributed to the soundtrack to Drive Angry Joe and Vengeance, A Love Story as well. I think if 211... accomplish one thing is that I now officially know what Weston Cage looks like and can spot him in movies like from sight. Like as soon as you showed up, I was like, hey, it's Cage's son, Weston Cage.
Wow.
He's the bank robber with like the long hair and the beard, in case you weren't aware.
Got it.
But yeah, anyway, 211 was directed by York Shackleton. And whatever else I'm going to say about the movie, I should let it be known that York Shackleton is the greatest name of all time. I think it's great. It sounds like a made-up name, but it's his real name.
Yeah.
Anyway, Shackleton actually used to be a professional snowboarder in the 90s before transitioning into filmmaking, including work on MTV's Undress and a movie called Kush with William Atherton. His previous film was called Pretty Perfect, which was released in 2014. Shackleton also co-wrote the movie alongside John Rebus, who lists this as his sole writing credit on IMDb. Now, 211 was released on June 8th, 2018, and if, like most people, you weren't seeing it, then you may have been seeing the John Wick knockoff from the co-writer of Iron Man 3, Hotel Artemis, which was not great. You could have also seen the all-female reboot spinoff of the Ocean's series with Ocean's 8, which was pretty good. Or you could have seen both of our favorite movie of 2018, Mike.
Hereditary?
Hereditary, yeah, that came out that day.
Yeah.
yeah, Hereditary came out the same day as 211. Two sides of the cinematic coin right there. and the IMDb plot synopsis for 211 reads, while on a routine patrol, an aging cop, his partner, and their ride-along get caught in a standoff with a band of former mercenaries robbing a bank. So, Mike, after all that's said and done, you know, we've gotten to 211 and we were like, you know, every time we go into an unknown video-on-demand Cage movie, like, the choices vary. It could be great. Could be like an unknown gem. Yeah. A lot of the time it's not that. But what were your overall thoughts on 211?
My overall thoughts on 211 was that it's pretty nothing. There's, like, nothing really going on. I think I texted you, I watched this on Thursday, and yeah. Then I texted you I'd forget it all by Sunday, and I think I might have. there's kind of nothing really going on. It's very rote. Like, you know, the young hotshot cop finds out his wife's pregnant in the very beginning, so that right. Now we care about him at the end, or while the danger is going on, And, you know, I don't know if they ever say that Cage is about to retire, but like we said, he might as well be. And just, it's just silly, like in that, and in a not fun way. It's kind of just dumb, basically. like you said, it's about 20 minutes of setup to get to the bank robbery, and then it's an hour-long shootout. And it's basically nobody moving for the whole hour. It's just guys shooting out of windows and guys shooting from behind cop cars.
Yeah.
And that's it, basically, the whole time. And there's, like, no drama between any of that going on. And, you know, we go to the hospital for a little bit because that's where the ride-along's mom is, working and stuff, right. The kid's mom. So, like, there's some drama there. But really, nothing matters. I don't care about any of these people. and it's just lame, basically.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we texted each other when we were done watching it. We both watched it on Thursday, and we're recording this on Sunday, which was a bad idea. We should have recorded it immediately afterwards because, yes, yeah. A lot of this movie has left my brain. And that's basically what we said. We said we're probably going to forget most of this movie by the time we record the episode. I do think it's more competently made than something like the Humanity Bureau.
Yeah.
But I think it's arguably worse because there's just nothing to it. Like, at least Humanity Bureau had, like, a point of view and a story. It was bad, but, like, but
yeah.
It had something, you know? At least it's an ethos. Yeah. At least the humanity bureau is an ethos, whereas 211 is just nothing.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is both a movie that has too much and too little going on. The story is basically just two cops get caught in a firefight, one of which is about to retire. I'm pretty sure they established that at the beginning of the movie. And one has a baby on the way, and their ride-along is stuck with them during all this, and that's basically all you need for a movie. If you just focus on those three characters, you might have had something compelling here. But then it has this long intro with the robbers, who were soldiers in Afghanistan, and we spend a lot of time with an Interpol agent who's tracking them, who does basically nothing throughout the movie. I don't know why she was there. We're spending time with other cops, and it's like, ooh, the one lady cop is flirting with this other cop. What could happen? And none of it matters. None of it matters in the long run. It's a lean hour 20 runtime. It's 86 minutes, but it's filled with the amount of characters that are better suited for a 3-hour runtime. I think right before we recorded this, I said it was basically, it's half the runtime of Heat, but twice as many characters.
It's so perfect.
And it's like, that's basically what it is. I feel like it's trying to be Heat a little bit, but it's like, Heat has a luxurious 3-hour runtime with all these different subplots that mean things and thematic elements. And this movie is not Heat. Just focus on Cage and his partner, and you might have had like a solid little B thriller, I think. But instead, you got a million other things that you're trying to focus on.
Yeah, the whole Interpol plot, I just don't understand what it is. Like, or why it's there.
It made no sense.
No. Yeah, like, there's that big, the robbery, the shootout or whatever at the beginning where they kill a guy to steal the money. And then there's, like, this quick investigation with Interpol and this one agent. And she tracks him down to America. And then she's kind of just, like, we flash to her or cut to her trying to investigate them while the shootout's going on. And it's like, I don't understand why this is happening. This makes no sense.
No, absolutely not. So Nicolas Cage is, like, the senior cop in the movie. What did you think of Cage in 211?
Like, he's fine, I guess. I don't know. He's doing okay. You know, there's nothing stand out, really. I guess maybe one scene. I guess we'll talk about it later, but
yeah.
He's, like, fine. Like, kind of like everything in the movie. Like you said, it's competent. It's, like, the movie is okay. It's just the story and, like, everything about that is terrible.
Right.
So I just don't really care about anybody. But he's okay. What'd you think?
I mean, he looks as bored to be here as I was to watch it. You know, he gets one dramatic moment towards the end, which is what you were alluding to, I think, before. I know exactly what you're talking about. And that was okay. A lot of the movie hinges on his relationship with his partner, Dwayne Cameron. And they're just pretty flat together, I feel like. Like, they don't really, you know, like, they just don't feel like partners to me. But Cage essentially has two arcs in the movie. One, where he learns to be closer to his daughter, right? And then one where he learns to like cameras, I guess, is basically what it is. He's what, like, he kind of, every once in a while, he'll complain, like, oh, you know, it's so hard to do a policeman's job, you know, because cameras are everywhere. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe don't do that so much. Like, I don't necessarily need to hear him talk about that. But then by the end of the movie, he's like, hey, let's take some pictures, guys, cameras, woo! apparently, Cage himself was not a big fan of the movie after its release. He even called it disappointing. And you know, and that's Nicolas Cage talking, who's been in a lot of terrible movies, and a lot of great ones. You know, we do this podcast because we love Cage, but you know, he's been in quite a few bad movies, and this is among them. And even Cage is saying, like, yeah, no, this is not a very good movie.
I think the only time he's ever not come out, like, you always find those interviews of him talking about a movie, and he always has some kind of artistic thing to say about even the most awful VOD movie. I think the only other one besides this was, like, Dying of the Light, and that got, like, stolen from them. So
yeah, that's true.
That says a lot.
Yeah, no, it does. So how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play in other movies, Mike?
Is this the first grandfather role that he's been?
I was thinking that myself. Yeah, you know, we've talked about Nicolas Cage playing the father a lot over the last, like, 10 years of movies or so. But I think this is the first time we've seen Nicolas Cage playing a grandfather.
Yeah.
Which is, like, that kind of blew my mind a little bit. Like, that Cage is old enough to, like, conceivably be playing a grandfather in movies now. And is he a grandfather in real life? I'm not actually sure.
I don't know.
I think
Weston
might have a kid or something like that. But I'm not sure. But, like, you know, I saw, like, you know, him, like, the subplot with his daughter, and she's about to have a baby. And it's like, oh my God. Remember Best of Times? Remember that young teenage Nicolas Cage? Like, you know, we've been on such a journey watching Nicolas Cage age through this podcast. It's really something.
It's been graceful, to say the least.
It has.
But it's another entry in the cop saga, Nicolas Cage movies.
Also had that too. Yeah, that's It Could Happen to You, World Trade Center, Bad Lieutenant, The Frozen Ground, and now 211 as well. Add that to the list.
You know, it wouldn't have been complete without 211. Yeah. And I'm glad he did it.
Now he can close the book on cop movies forever, is basically what correct. You're saying. Also, I mean, they show him jogging at the end of the movie, and I was like, hey, the runner, guys! The runner!
He's back!
He's running around!
He did it.
He's doing his running thing. Yeah, all right. Let's talk about the moments or scenes that stood out to you in the movie, Mike. I kind of wanted to kind of just break down the opening up sequences of this movie. Because mm-hmm. we open with this prologue in Afghanistan where the robbers kill these two people who are hacking into something, and then they secure some money, and then that's what spurs the bank robbery in Massachusetts. And for a little bit, it seems like this movie might be exciting. And then after that sequence, we're then introduced to the Interpol agent, Rosie, who's on a mission in Kabul that gets interrupted so she can work on finding who killed the people in Afghanistan, right? All right. So that all makes sense, that tracks. But then, considering all that she does in the movie, they should have just left her in Kabul. and then after that, we meet Cage's daughter, Lisa, and her husband, who reveal that she's about to have a baby. And then finally, we get Nicolas Cage, who pulls up and picks up Steve. And then we're introduced to Kenny, who's getting bullied at school and gets into a fight. And so the school puts him in a ride-along program for some reason, because that's what schools do, I guess. And that means we had to cut to 5 different places just to be introduced to all of the characters in this movie, which, again, is 86 minutes long. You know, it'd be fine if it had a longer runtime, but you got an hour and 20 minutes. You guys got to move. You don't have much time to do all this. It really reminded me of Suicide Squad, where it was just like introduction after introduction after introduction.
Right.
Just nonstop. It was like every time they cut to a new place, I was like, why are we here? Like, we're in Afghanistan, and suddenly we're in Kabul, and then suddenly we're in Massachusetts, and suddenly we're in high school? Like, what's happening?
It's very weird.
It's very strange. So, yeah, that whole opening is very weird. There's a couple of funny moments in those before the actual shootout happens that I didn't want to highlight. There's the moment where the guidance counselor or whatever is talking to Kenny's mom, mm-hmm. and she's like, "Oh, well, we have this saying, you know, if a teen's being mean to a teacher, come clean." And like that was such a dorky little phrase, and I thought that was very funny. Like, just
yeah, that's definitely something that I would hear in high school, though.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I thought that was
it'd
like
be on a poster.
Like, that was pretty solid, because no kid would ever do that.
Right.
So that was pretty funny. Also, another scene that I thought was pretty funny was actually with the Interpol agent, the one decent scene with her, where she's interrogating the gun store owner about a guy named Trey, who's one of the robbers in the bank robbery. And the gun store owner's like, "Oh, I don't know any Trey." And the camera pans up to show a picture of the guy with Trey.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought that was very funny. And again, those are a couple of funny moments. Otherwise, any scenes that you wanted to mention, Mike? Anything that stood out to you?
There's the Cage scene, the big moment he gets, the dramatic scene.
Yes.
After the shootout, during the shootout, I don't even really remember.
It's like after the main shootout, I think. But yeah, so at
before phase two of the shootout,
which is the same as phase one of the shootout. but early on in the shootout, I think I know exactly what you're talking about. Early on in the shootout, Steve, the partner, he gets shot in the leg or something, and he thinks he's dying.
Yeah.
And so they like send him off in the ambulance, send him to the hospital. And Cage had like this big blow up moment where he's like, "My son is dead." Right, that's the one you're talking about.
That's the one. Yeah, but he's yelling at his like chief or whatever.
Right. Yeah, he thinks his partner has died, and he's saying, "My son." It's really his son-in-law, but I guess they're so close that he's like a son to him. I don't know.
They came together through this, you know?
That whole blow-up sequence is really like the one sequence where Cage is acting in the movie, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. That's all. Yeah. What else stood out to me? I mean, I guess just the whole setup to the shootout was like kind of tense and like kind of funny in a second for like a little bit.
Yeah.
Where they have like the robbers or whatever have planted a bomb across town. So that their plan is they'll detonate the bomb, all the cops will go there while they rob the bank, and Cage and his partner and their ride-along see a guy parked in the red zone in front of the bank, and they're like, "We gotta ticket him." And the bomb goes off, and the call goes out over the radio, and they just don't leave, and the guy's like, "Oh, fuck, they're not moving." And they're just like, "Okay," and he just gets out and lights up the car and just starts a big shootout.
Yep.
It's just very silly.
Yeah,
basically,
it's not a very good movie. But yeah, so right before the shootout, there's a scene where it's Cage is in the car with the ride along Kenny, who's a black teenager, and you know, there's a scene where it's like it's just the scene with a white cop explaining to a black teenager why cameras are ruining police work. Like, that was a choice. But they kind of, like, bond a little bit in the car, and, like, Kenny explains to him, like, oh, I was being bullied, and I fought back, and Cage like, yeah, I probably would have done the same thing.
I would have thrown some kid in the urinal or whatever. Yeah. Or is that what happened to Kenny? He got pushed in the urinal, right?
Kenny got pushed in the urinal, and then he punched the kid in the face, but the teacher only saw him punching the kid in the face, I think is what happened. Right. Yeah, so they kind of bond a little bit and, you know, all that stuff. And then the shootout actually happens. Steve gets shot in the leg. So a lot of the movie is about trying to get him out of there. There's a scene where Kenny is taking a video of Steve dying, where yeah. he kind of, like, takes a video of himself and, like, kind of leaves a message for Cage's daughter and, like, the potential baby that they're going to have. And what I liked about that sequence is that, you know, Steve is, like, quote-unquote dying, and Kenny's phone is dying at the same time. And it's like, ooh, symbolism.
Innocence lost.
But, you know, they end up getting out of there. They end up getting Kenny in the ambulance and stuff like that. But they get separated from Kenny.
Right.
They get separated from Kenny. He's, like, off in the distance somewhere, and Cage is trying to find him. And he's asking the ambulance driver, like, hey, have you seen a teenager around here? And the guy in the ambulance, who it's just him and Steve lying in the ambulance. The guy in the ambulance is like, teenager? I don't think so. And it's like, that's a, I was saying that, like, that's a yes or no question. Like, is there a teenager in your car or not?
Basically.
And it's like,
and he's not sure.
Yeah, he has no idea. Which I thought was pretty funny. But then after that, Kenny's able to charge his phone, call his mom, who happens to be a nurse working on the cops who were injured, including Steve. And that one lady cop, I guess. She also gets shot. Yeah. But yeah, and I think she's actually working on the lady cop when he calls her. Maybe they thought it would be, like, too coincidental if she was working on Steve at the same time. I don't know.
Steve is in the room where she's working on the lady.
Oh yeah, he's right next to her. Yeah. It's very like, why not just have her working on Steve? So there was that whole sequence. You know, it's fine. It's all fine. There's nothing, like, it's just all forgettable. There's nothing here that's like, you know, oh, there was a good scene in this movie. Like, I can't really say that there was. And it all ends, like, pretty abruptly, too. I mean, they get the hostage out. Like, one of the hostages dies in the thing. I remember them shooting the bald guy. One of the cops blows up. All the robbers are killed. And, you know, all that stuff happens. Then it cuts to 1 year later at the end. And it's Cage's birthday, and everybody's there, and everybody's living happy, and Steve's alive.
Yep.
You know, after all that, Steve's, like, alive, and the granddaughter is born. They're best pals with Kenny now, apparently.
Yeah, he's hanging out.
Kenny's just chilling there, and Cage's like, hey, let's take some pictures in that crazy phone of yours. And
it winks at the camera, basically.
Yeah, he spends the entire movie telling Kenny, like, oh, these kids today with their cameras and their phones. And then the very end, he's like, ha, take some pictures. I'm that phone, you crazy kid. Roll credits. That's basically the movie. That's it. So that's why I think the arc of, like, Cage's arc in the movie is less about him, you know, bonding with his daughter and more about him, like, learning to like phones or something.
To accept technology.
To accept technology. It's really, really weird. But yeah, I feel like we haven't spent that much time talking about the movie, but I feel like we've already hit all the main points of the movie.
We did it. There is. I do want to talk about the guy, the cop blowing up, because that was, like, pretty graphic. When the robbers decide to, like, release the hostages, kind of thing, because SWAT's about to come in.
Right, but one of them has, like, a bomb or something, right?
Yeah, he slips a bomb into her pocket or something, and she's like, "Oh, he puts it." Like, when they get out, she tells the cop, "Like, he put something in my pocket." And he takes it out, and he's like, oh, no! And he, like, starts to run away, and then it goes off, and, like, they just show, like, it's clearly, like, a dummy getting blown up. But, like, it's pretty graphic for this movie that hasn't had any graphic stuff going on. Like, I think you see a limb go flying.
I think you might, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, damn, okay, cool.
Yeah, that's intense. But I think it's interesting because, again, it's based on the North Hollywood shootout, which is supposedly one of the most intense shootouts in police history, like I said, but... I don't believe any cops actually died in the North Hollywood shootout. And
I don't know.
I don't believe, like, I did a little bit of cursory research before we started the podcast, and I'm pretty sure no cops actually died. There are a lot of people who are wounded, but, you know, the robbers died, and I don't think any actual civilians or cops were killed in the shootout. That said, I think it's weird that it's supposedly based on the North Hollywood shootout and completely fictionalizes the entire thing.
Just everything else.
Everything about it. Like, I mean, it even changes the setting, so it's not even, like, in Hollywood anymore, which is the weirdest part to me.
It's just inspired by.
And it's not even a real town that they're in. Chesterford is a fake town in Massachusetts. It's not a real Massachusetts town.
That's a town, if somebody said, make up a name for a Massachusetts town, and you would just be like, I don't know, Chesterford? That's the most fake Massachusetts sounding name.
Pretty much, yeah. So it was very odd. And yeah, and again, it's just so much, there's so much weird subplots that don't add up to anything. Like the whole prologue in Afghanistan, like why do we need to see that? You know, because I mean, I guess that's like them taking out a guy who was like, oh, I sent money somewhere. And they're like, all right, let's go to that place and rob things. But like, I feel like you could have cut out that scene. You could have cut out everything with the Interpol agent. Like, you did not need her at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything with, like, I don't know, with Kenny and the ride-along stuff. It's just like, I mean, I get the appeal behind that. Again, if the movie was just about Cage, his partner, and Kenny, I think there's a great inherent danger in having the ride-along there for the shootout. If that could make for some interesting drama. But the movie is just so spread thin across like five different subplots that it spends like not enough time on the three characters that you would actually want to spend time with in this movie.
Yeah. Kenny saves the day, though. He saves Cage at the end when the robber guy comes out and he's like shooting everybody and he's approaching Cage. And Kenny like steals the gun from the dead guy and shoots him or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's neat, I guess. Yeah. He got a child to murder somebody, so that's fun. But he's going to take some pics at the end. Pew, pew, pew. Yeah. So that's cool.
I just laughed so hard when it ended. And he was like, ha, take some pictures on that crazy photo of yours, you wild kid. And then like, they just cut to credits right there. It's like, come on. Yeah. Like, that's... and I think it's so weird that Kenny was at Cage's birthday party, too. Like, it seemed like one of those things where, like, maybe they're all best friends now because of this intense experience that they went through. But also, like, he's a 15-year-old kid with otherwise no relation to these characters at all. Like,
yeah. You know? Shared trauma, Mike.
I guess, you know, relationships based on intense circumstances never last long, Mike. Yeah. Keanu Reeves said that in Speed.
Oh, yeah, there we go. I forgot.
Yeah. All right. Any other scenes you wanted to point out, Mike, before we move on to Letterboxd reviews?
No, not really, because I can't remember anything.
Yeah, fair enough. Again, pretty short movie, not very good, pretty forgettable all around. But let's hear some Letterboxd thoughts right now. I got a one-star review. It's actually the first couple of paragraphs of David Ehrlich's review. David Ehrlich's a film critic who is on IndieWire and a couple of other different sites. He posted like an excerpt of his review on Letterboxd, so this is from him. Unwatchable, even by the subterranean standards of a direct-to-video Nicolas Cage thriller, director York Shackleton's 2:11 is the kind of low-grade schlock that leaves you with a newfound respect for the basic competence that most bad movies bring to the table. Not even the opening credits feel totally credible, as they insist the film is based on a screenplay by the filmmaker, a point of attribution that doubles as a brutal self-own. These are but a few of the many haunting questions that loom over 2:11. What? The more existential, why? And of course, wait. How the hell did this movie about war profiteers in Afghanistan suddenly become a heartwarming story about a black teenager who learns to stop worrying and love white cops?
Holy shit.
Also, when the film's IMDb trivia page says that Nicolas Cage read the script in 2014, was that the only time? And finally, what the hell is a 2:11 anyway?
Wow.
Sure, that was pretty good. Here's a half-star review from Letterboxd, which reads, while this movie is 85 minutes and spends 30 of it introducing way too many characters, like 211 characters, most of which do very little. It's late period Nick Cage, so don't worry, he's only got about 32 minutes of screen time. This is anti-art. It's one of the most sterile and ugly non-movies ever. Clearly, nobody wants to be on set, and nothing interesting happens to even justify making this.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. Here's a 3-star review of 2:11, which I believe is the like best review I could find of the movie. The opening credits show that this was directed by York Shackleton and based on a screenplay by York Alec Shackleton. And so the opening credits are showing me two things I have never seen before. One, a filmmaker using a different name for different credits on a film, but not as a pseudonym. Although there has never been a name in history that sounds more like a made-up name than York Shackleton. That's the best name I've ever heard, and it's real. Two, based on a screenplay by. This is not an awkward way of saying written by, because the following credit is screenplay by John Rebus. So Shackleton wrote a screenplay for a movie he wanted to direct, but then hired someone to write a new screenplay based on that screenplay.
What?
Presumably because he knew he wasn't a good writer, which would be an unprecedented level of self-awareness that I think he deserves credit for. This was the second movie I watched for Nick Cage's birthday because I knew it was supposed to be awful, and his birthday seemed like the right time to make sacrifices with the worst stuff I had to get through. I thought it was fine, I liked Cage in it, and I liked the Interpol lady, and I love that Cage's son, Weston, had a prominent role on the opposite side of the law from his dad, and tries to sniper him at one point. Plus, the movie just flew by really quickly for me. There was also a nice moment when the Interpol lady's GPS recalculates and is like, exit the freeway in 0 feet. And it was a very accurate portrayal of GPS behavior that I could definitely relate to. Maybe this is a bad movie, I don't know, but like, I cannot stress this enough, it's a lot better than Captain Corelli's Mandolin.
Wow. Which remember is, that movie?
Yeah, man, I hated Captain Corelli's Mandolin, and I think that was probably a better movie than this one. Although that movie's like over 2 hours long and is way more boring, so
yeah,
who knows, who's to say, really. Here's a half star review of 211, which reads, okay, so I noticed that there are a lot of Nick Cage movies in which he is jogging. This is also the case in 211, so I decided to create a list with Cage movies that meet this criteria. Since I can only remember three movies that feature a jogging Cage, I conducted a Google image search for Nicolas Cage jogging and got some amusing results that at the same time were slightly disturbing. My list isn't finished yet, but this is the only interesting thing I can say about this movie.
That's it? There's no list? He doesn't provide the list?
Does not have the list. No.
That's amazing.
Here's a 1.5-star review of 211, which reads, this is like a Paul Haggis movie made by the food Haggis.
That's so stupid.
I loved it, though. and I got one more. It's a 1/2-star review, which reads, this was on at my work. I watched it. I regret it. Technically, I got paid to watch it. 0 out of 10. Wouldn't watch again, even if I was paid again.
Wow.
And I think that about sums up 211 pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So any final thoughts on 211, Mike, that you want to get out there before we wrap this up?
Nah, you can skip it, okay. Basically.
You've already forgotten your final thoughts on the movie.
Yeah.
It is so ephemeral. It's so, like, it's a nothing of a film. Do not recommend is basically what we're saying.
Yeah, basically. Right.
Fair enough. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter and Letterboxd.
And you can find me at MSmithFilmBlog on Twitter and MikeSmithFilm on Letterboxd and all of our podcasts and stuff over at Rapture Press. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DeCrescio. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. And if you want to contact us, hit us up at MikeMikeGoToTheMovies@gmail.com. Or,
wrong.
I was about to say, NicolasCageCompleteWorks@gmail.com. There we go. I mean, you can send it to the other one, too. They both work. And you can find the rest of our podcast on Rapture Press alongside The Review Zoo and Badass Biz Bitches. Our next episode of The Complete Works, we'll see Nicolas Cage finally get to play the role of Superman in a small supporting role in the big screen version of Teen Titans Go. Teen Titans Go to the Movies, which I've seen and I think is a very fun time. So I'm looking forward to rewatching that movie, and I'm eager to hear your thoughts on it, Mike, because it is like,
yeah, I'm excited.
It's basically Deadpool for kids. So
perfect.
Definitely worth checking out. Plus, keep an eye out for the next Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. We'll be doing an off mic pretty soon for El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. And Mike's going to be on vacation next week. I'll be enlisting somebody's help to talk Zombieland Double Tap as well. So look forward to that in the near future. Thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.